Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you, Kelly?
I'm really empowered. So I went to
You went to the march.
I went to the march. It was
the Saturday Los Angeles one.
Saturday Los Angeles. I found out it was the biggest one besides the DC one. So it was really interesting.
More people turned out for the march than turned out for the inauguration event, right?
I think it's so true. Yeah. Isn't that incredible? But yeah, it was funny because I've been thinking about it a lot. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I should go. I didn't want to leave my husband alone with the kids all day. And I just kind of was like, I don't know. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I kept thinking about it. And I said to my husband, I got to go. And he's like, I support you. Go. And so it was such a beautiful thing to see. Just all these people really coming out, you know, wanting just, I don't know, just wanting to, for me, it was a lot about just kindness and love and peace and just sort of saying, hey, we're all in this together. It was really beautiful.
That's really sweet.
It was cool to be a part of that.
On a practical level, I don't go to those things because I just don't like large crowds like that. I can't say I'm claustrophobic or certainly not agoraphobic, but that many people in a space, I don't know, too much paranoia maybe about being pickpocketed or violence and all that stuff. So you're brave. How did you deal with traffic and
You know what's so funny? That type of stuff doesn't give me anxiety, but ironically, the girl that I went with, a friend of mine, the train was, we went on the subway.
It was so packed.
It was so packed on the way back that she had like a panic attack and we had to get off.
Did you call it a subway? I think it's the metro line, right?
Okay, what is the difference?
Wasn't subway underneath, under the ground?
Yeah, but isn't it under?
I guess it? Yeah. Maybe it is. I don't know. I don't do LA very much because I live out in the
boondocks. I think it is under. I think it is under.
Oh, then I stand corrected. But I thought they called it metro out here.
Well, it is the metro is like that. But I think, you know, either
anyway,
way.
You had a great time. That's what mattered. So you parked someplace far away and took the train.
Her husband drop us off.
Okay.
So then it was perfect.
Oh, very nice.
And it was great. Really cool and fun. And then we went for like ramen because we were like standing for like 4 hours.
Wow.
So it was like perfect. It was like little comfort food and like it was just great.
And
so,
the clouds parted because
it was great.
Sunshine day.
Isn't that so funny? The weather was perfect.
That's awesome.
So it was great.
Yeah. Good for you. Glad you went. Yeah. I can see the sparkle in your eye.
I mean, it was nice to be a part of and it was cool. And then I saw pictures of all the marches around the world. Mm-hmm. Do you know there were marches in like Kenya and Oslo?
I know, everywhere. It's amazing.
I mean, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. So it was really cool.
That is cool.
And you, how was your week?
My week was good. I was really busy with work and some of my other projects. But let's see, the highlights of my weekend. I went and saw Hidden Figures. Oh my gosh, I just love that movie. For those of you who have not seen it, it was so touching for me. And it did make me really, really angry, I have to say, about how little of American women's history were ever taught in school.
Yes.
Like this was happening when I was a child.
Yep.
These women were like so prominent and so important in the world, and I'd never heard of them. Which
ever.
Is that, so I was angry. But I love the movie. It was touching.
So
it was
good.
Sad. It was so wonderful. So it's one of the ones that came out as a best picture for the Academies.
Oh, it did.
Yeah,
it was,
and I think
so
they just.
Good.
Oh
my God,
the
bathroom part killed me because, like,
I know.
You know, I have
we
a bladder of an infant,
yes.
So I just, like, I could only feel what she was going through.
Yeah, and so the racism, so, oh, I just
it was really well
paying
done.
Paying attention to that and improving, you know, humanity makes you see how ugly humanity can be.
Oh my God, right?
100%. Oh, dear. Yeah, so that, and then the two teams I had left out of eight teams in football both just,
wait, are you doing like a fantasy thing?
No, at the beginning of each year, Christopher and I pick like 6 to 8 teams and we, you know, put small bets like $10 on each just to win.
Cool.
It goes all the way through the season. So we don't bet more. We don't do anything.
Oh, that's smart.
And so we had eight teams and two made it to the NFC and AFC championships.
Wow.
And they both lost. They were both crushed.
Oh.
So that was sad. But that's okay. We're over it.
But do you watch it or you just bet?
No, we watched.
Oh my God, David would like literally kill this because he's so upset that I don't watch football. And like every time he hears somebody else like that watches football with their like partner, he gets like.
But that's make a bet.
That's what I'm saying. I think I need an incentive.
Yeah, that's why I watch. I mean, I could not watch if I were just watching.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Not that I'm encouraging betting out there for anybody who isn't Gamblers Anonymous. Simply saying that for me,
right,
since, you know, small amount. It keeps me excited for the whole season. So we do that on hockey also.
Oh, that's so fun. That's cool.
Fewer teams. And we're not, I'm a fickle bettor. I'm a a fickle fan. It's not like I have one team that's my team. Because I've never really, you know, grew up or watched a team.
Yeah.
Whereas Christopher's a diehard Packers fan, and he's a Packers fan. So,
oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
cool.
Enough said about that. Why don't we get down in with our last guest from last week, and then we'll introduce our guest for today. So, last week we had Steve Powers, who's the CEO of the revitalized Bodhi Tree.
They call it Bodhi Tree 2.0, I realized.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, isn't that funny? Because it's like the second version. So it was really neat to hear about the changes and kind of what's coming. And a lot of, if you missed the show, he talked a lot about how there's going to be live streaming of speakers and different things that you can see, which is just lovely. So you don't have to, you know, be in the physical location to enjoy many of the speakers of the Bodhi Tree.
And a lot of cool stuff on their website, you know, lots of cool blogs and, you know, things to think about, meditations and such. So if you missed that, go ahead and check out that show. And also you can go to thebodhitree.com. So for today, I've been so excited. We had to postpone this guest. She was so sweet about it. I couldn't wait for today.
I know.
Yes. So we're going to introduce our guest today. Lisa Loving Dalton spent years working with or stunt doubling for a galaxy of celebrity stars, including Madonna, Meryl Streep, Robert Redford. I can't wait to hear about that. What it's like to stunt as a woman for a man. Oh, goodness. Katherine Hepburn, Sean Connery, Dustin Hoffman, Daryl Hannah, Michelle Pfeiffer, Robin Williams, Robert Downey Jr., and the list goes on and on. Beginning as a naive, insecure actress trying to use extra work and stunts as a way into the motion picture industry firmament, Dalton rises to become one of the top stunt professionals on the East Coast. Appeared in more than 200 films, television shows, and commercials in New York, Hollywood, and Texas. Today, Lisa is an award-winning director, producer of independent fiction and documentary films. Lisa also teaches and performs in Russia, Europe, and the Americas on stage and film, beginning in 1976, and as a BondST.org as a founding member. She is on the SAG-AFTRA DFW board, president of the, is it Tarrant? 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 Okay, show tell us. Tarrant County Live Theater League, president of the National Michael Chekhov Association, and is a John Maxwell Founder Circle certified speaker, trainer, and coach. She is the author of her new book, Falling from the Stars, where she reveals her journey. Also certified in NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, and neurological repatterning. Welcome, Lisa.
Welcome to you guys, Deborah and Kelly. It's a pleasure to be here.
we're so excited to have you.
So we have sort of
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, we have sort of two main arenas that we don't totally want to cover. One, what it was just like to be in Hollywood and as a stunt woman and all that. And then about the injuries that you suffered and how you revived yourself and all of that. So why don't we just start with how did you get into the stunt business?
Well, I really was a terribly klutzy little kid and a tomboy and very sort of competitive and aggressive. I too, was a Packers fan, by the way.
That's so funny.
avid football watcher and player. I just felt that women should be able to play football or climb the, you know, in the tree fort, that we shouldn't be limited by, you know, gender issues, and but I was definitely clumsy, and so I had to learn how to survive falling down. And I was riveted by entertaining. I seemed to like to fall when I had an audience, and so by the time I was in fifth grade, I wrote, produced, and directed my first play, and my life of athletics and acting just sort of continued through my schooling in college. But in college, I was, after having been a sort of hotshot in my high school theater department, I was a total non-persona in my college theater department. And it was the 70s, so I just went out and made my own sort of radical avant-garde theater. And I went into the fields of mime and circus skills and into dance and avant-garde techniques that were very physical, acrobatics, gymnastics, and stage combat. And when I went to New York to pursue my theater career, as you mentioned in the introduction, I was with the Bond Street Theater Company, which was a La Mama theater organization back then in the late 70s when it was founded, actually 40 years ago. And today, Bond Street is still functioning 40 years later. They are traveling in places like Myanmar and Afghanistan and India and in Haiti and in various war-torn places, refugee camps, where they perform these very physical styles of theater with stilts and gymnastics and juggling and music that surpasses all language barriers, and they bring uplifting, educating, and inspiring work through various organizations, including the UN and the MacArthur Foundation and things like that. So we kind of came from a political satire clowning field in the 70s in New York, and when they started going overseas, I was recently married, so I didn't want to travel overseas, and I got an opportunity to be a stand-in on a movie. Mm-hmm. And a stand-in is a person who stands in the place of the star while they're fixing the lights and working mm-hmm. and practicing the camera focus, things like that. So I got hired first to be a stand-in and photo double for Tina Louise from Gilligan's Island.
Oh, my gosh.
Gilligan. Oh, you know, because she was a tall redhead, as am I. And in addition to that, on that movie, another actress, also another soft-spoken, funny gal named Julie Haggerty from Airplane.
Oh, wow.
Her line was, "Oh, Ted."
Yes.
And she was kidnapped, or her character was kidnapped in this story, and spent 3 weeks of the filming time with me as being her instead of her in these chase scenes with the vehicle. And the driver of the vehicle was one of the two kidnappers, and the passenger was his sidekick. The driver turned out to be the stunt coordinator. I didn't even know what that was when I got the job. It turns out that the coordinator is the person who hires the stunt players and arranges and designs the stunts and supervises all the safety on the set for the stunts. And so I just decided to pick his brain throughout these 3 weeks to find out what I could about stunts, because I figured if I fell down a lot and made it look good, which I'd actually gotten kind of a review from the Village Voice from one of these performances, radical performances I was doing in the park, that my stage combat was too realistic and too gruesome for kids in the park, and that I must have gotten an A-plus in Combat 101. So I took it as a backhanded compliment, and I said, maybe stunts would be a great way for me to get into the business and get more acting opportunities. And it was also interesting that the sidekick was Ed O'Neill, a completely unknown actor who, of course, went on to do, you know, Married with Children and Modern Family and stuff like that. So it was a very funny time, I can guarantee you that. And at the end of that shoot, in addition to just the photo doubling, I got hired by the stunt coordinator to do an actual stunt where I had to hang off the door of a garbage truck in a chase scene with a limousine and a cop car and the garbage truck. So that kind of led to the whole future career.
Unbelievable.
Oh.
So, okay, I have a lot of questions too. So, and you didn't have fear doing these things, or was it just excitement or the adrenaline kicks in? I want to know about that.
Yeah, well, here's a good lesson for everyone to learn. Adrenaline is adrenaline, and whether you call it fear or excitement is a matter of your mind and not a matter of the chemical.
Yes.
So when we get that adrenaline charge, we have a choice. to call it fear and say, ah, I'm scared.
Yeah.
Or we can say, ooh, I'm excited. And for my choice, I'm going to always choose the prettier element there. You know, when I say, ooh, I'm excited, it enables me to transform that adrenaline into the boost that it's actually divinely given to us to do. You know, that's, it's a divinely bestowed gift that allows us to exceed super, our regular human limitations and do superhuman things. So that, I always chose to call it excitement. And yes, that excitement absolutely does catch you. And when you know how to sort of transform it and focus it, then it really helps you overcome all the obstacles. And I you would have to say I am kind of a thrill seeker. I was at one point on a talk show where they had, the title of the talk show was called Daredevil Women, and they had a psychologist along with a race car driver and a female biplane trick pilot. So in one of those old-fashioned double-winged planes, she did these tricks. Wow. And the host asked the psychologist, why do these crazy women do this? You know, this woman who jumps off buildings and crashes cars and goes through plate glass windows, and then this, you know, race car driver and this airplane pilot, what makes these women do this kind of thing? And she said that there was, we could think of ourselves as all having a threshold of excitement, and that people's thresholds can be at different levels. So if you, for example, had to wake up at 5 a.m., you might set an alarm and wake up. But, you know, somebody else might set an alarm and wake up 5 minutes early because they have, like, a mental alarm, and they don't really even need a real one. And somebody else might need five alarms that are set, you know, increasing distances from the bed, and a friend to call just in case. And he said, the, you know, she said, these women are five alarm women.
Yes.
It takes more to wake them up.
Wow. So cool.
Interesting. Oh my God. Was there ever a stunt that you were required to do where you could not transform in your mind the fear into excitement, one that just scared you the entire time?
The one that was hardest to do that for was actually the leaping tall building one, where I was on a film with Tom Berenger and Daphne Zuniga, and it was this, I had to leap across an alley from the sixth floor rooftops in New York. And
with no
props? Practiced all week, you know, in a gymnasium, sort of doing my broad jumping, and I knew I had the distance cleared. But when I'm standing over the edge of that building, looking down, and there wasn't enough room to put an airbag in, which is normally what we would have for that high fall. So they're down there with one of those little fireman's nets, and all I could think of was some, you know, cartoon where they're like, if I jump and I miss, I'm going to, like, bounce back and forth off of the two walls these buildings.
Yeah.
And they're going to be running around down there going, she's going to go over here. No, over here. No, over here. You know, flat. And that was...
But you made it.
I did make it. But I, even just talking about it, I can feel the adrenaline coming right back these many years later, because, and for days I walked around going, oh my gosh, I leapt tall buildings.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. I can relate on the smallest level. I remember as a kid in gymnastics class, they had the high beam and the low beam, and they'd have us practice these routines on the low beams with cartwheels and all these things. And then, you know, it's like piece of cake, had that down because you're 6 inches from the ground. And then to get up on that one, which was only, 2.5 or 3 feet high, that was like terrifying.
You know?
So on the smallest scale, gosh, that would have been so
That's
scary, because you're literally doing that without any props, right? There's nothing holding you up like Peter Pan on a string.
No.
And I was running on a ledge 26 stories up inside Grand Central Station for a film where I was doubling Kelly McGillis. And that, they really wanted me to be on a harness for that, but I couldn't run with the harness because the harness kept getting caught. And I was like, you know, I don't want the harness. They're like, if you fall off that ledge, you're dead. I mean, you're 26 stories up. There's nothing. There's nothing. I'm like, it's okay. I got it handled. You know? And I had worked in a little accidental trip, which was really fun because they were like, you know, oh my God.
Yeah, and exactly.
You know, no, that was planned. That was all part of
it.
Almost falling off, but not really. But that was just, I love the science of it. And I love the athletic precision that is required in doing the stunts. And looking at things, I had to dodge a train and sort of trying to judge exactly when to go and what could happen if you slip on or trip on a railroad tie and this train is coming and things like that. And I do love pushing the edge of the envelope in that way. And but always having having enough sense that it's not daredevil work. It's really more athletic precision.
That is incredible. And I want to know about the stars. Which one
Kelly,
was your... I, well, it's funny because, you know, I'm from the East Coast. You know, Dr. Deborah's from here. She's like, yeah, whatever. But me, I'm so fascinated by all this. And I wanted to know who kind of was the kindest to you and were there any who weren't so nice to you?
Well, let me start with the weren't so nice. And I have to say that of the gazillions that I worked with, that there really isn't anyone who... there wasn't anyone who was mean.
Okay, that's good.
There were people who just really didn't engage at all.
That makes sense.
You know, I would say that someone like Sean Connery.
Oh yeah.
You know, he didn't really engage at all. And in that particular film called Wrong is Right, he was a reporter who was sort of caught in the middle of a protest rally that broke into fights in Times Square. And so we had like 500 extras, but surrounding him was a team of actual stunt players who were supposed to be fighting each other and make sure that Sean didn't get mauled in the process. And I was in a situation where it was a stunt coordinator who came in from who didn't know me from Los Angeles and was forced to hire me because the Screen Actors Guild forced him to hire at least 3 women out of every 10 local stunt players that they hired, and he was really angry about that, about having to hire women. And the ratio, just, you know, for people to understand, of roles of men to women is, at that time it was actually about 2.5 female roles to every 8 male roles. Now I think we're up to 7. There's 7 male roles to every 3 female roles. So out of 10 roles, 3 will go to women, 7 will go to men. If you look at a cast list, that's basically the average, 30% women. And so he was required to hire 30% women. And because he was mad at having to hire me, he wouldn't talk to me. He wouldn't tell me what to do. He just completely pretended I wasn't even in the room. And so I decided, well, you know, I'm here. I'm on a contract. I could stand on the side and walk home with my money and do nothing. But that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to work, and I'm an actor. And so I'm going to do what any good actor would do, is figure out that I've got a job. What's my character? My character is, right, with my red hair, obviously I'm going to be an American protester as opposed to a Middle Eastern. So my objective is to protect Sean Connery. And anybody who gets near to Sean Connery is going to get blocked by me. And so I just went out there and I pretended like I knew what I was doing. I pretended like I was told what to do and that this was my job, even though, and you know, fortunately, I had a couple of stuntmen who knew that I was highly qualified and highly skilled, and they made sure nobody messed with me. They got my back, and so I just stuck like glue to this Sean Connery side. And made sure that nobody got close to him. And a couple times, some of the extras got out of hand, and I had to be a little, little physical and throw them. But I did my job. And but you know, Mr. Connery was simply just kind of oblivious, doing what he needed to do, and that was okay. But my favorite, there really were, and you mentioned some earlier. There, I have three people who just really impressed me a lot, and one was Robert Redford. And by the way, in the intro, it says worked with or doubled for. So I didn't actually double any of them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what would that be like?
Yes. But I did work with Robert Redford on Legal Eagles with Daryl Hannah and Deborah Winger. And Robert Redford had to knock me down in a chase sequence as he was running through a crowd. And we did about seven takes. And after every single take, Mr. Redford came up to me and said, "Are you okay? Aww. How was that? Do you want me to do anything differently?"
So sweet.
I was just so impressed. You know, he was so courteous, and you know, it was so nice getting to sort of gaze directly into those stunning blue eyes.
I was going to say, he could knock me down 20 times. I would have him do it again. Nope, you need to do it again. That wasn't good enough. Do it again.
And I will concur. He used to come into my father's car wash when I was cashier when I was a young girl. And he was always so sweet and so polite. He'd say, "Oh, you're doing such a good job. You're so young." It was so sweet.
So sweet. That's so nice to hear.
Yes. So, I mean, obviously he sustained that throughout his life, and I really, really appreciate that so much. And Meryl Streep was absolutely amazing. I worked with her in a reshooting sequence of a film called Still of the Night with Roy Scheider. And this movie was being reshot about 6 months after it had been finished. And it was kind of a murder mystery type of thing, and you weren't sure whether Meryl was actually the murderer or who. So I was doubling her, doing some things that kind of weren't really stunts. I was being a shadow, which was possibly Meryl, with, you know, creeping around, being a silhouette with a knife and things like that. And I had to walk in Meryl's shoes, which she's a size smaller than I am, I can tell you that. And they were high heels, and it was winter, and I had to walk very stealthily through the park and hit these marks very precisely. And so it was very interesting, because it's hard to walk slowly in high heels, gracefully and stealthily, especially when they're a size too small.
I was gonna say, well,
and when it's 30 degrees out.
Why couldn't you wear the right size shoe? Like the audience could really pick that up?
Yeah. No, not that, but because it was 6 months after they did the shoot, they couldn't find any matching shoes.
Oh, no.
I see.
Wow. I remember that scene, actually. You did a great job.
Oh, my God. That's now I have to go back and watch. Oh, that's so cool.
It was a very suspense, edge of your seat.
Wow.
But the special part was sitting in the makeup room with Meryl Streep right next to me. Aww. And I'm sort of going, oh, my God, this is like a dream come true. I'm girl talking. Yeah. Meryl and the makeup artist and myself, and we're just sitting there, you know, getting made up and girl talking, and someone from production comes into the room and starts asking me about doing a fall, and I said, sure, I can do that, and but I need a special contract for that, and they were like, well, could you just, you know, I mean, before they asked me to do it, they asked me, could I help them figure out how it might be done? So I went out and looked at the set and told them how this fall is about a 15-foot drop straight down past a rock wall, and how it could be done safely. And so then they come back in and they're asking me, you know, could I do it? So I'm sure I can do it, and I just need the proper contract. And they come back in after having told me no problem with the contract. And with Meryl sitting right next to me, they start trying to convince me to do it without a proper contract.
Interesting.
I was like, I'm thinking, really? I have to sit here and have this conversation, this humiliating conversation of disrespect, while I'm sitting next to Meryl Streep, honest to goodness. So I excuse myself and take the conversation outside and say, no, I can't. I'm not going to do a 15-foot belly flop for you, arrange it and design it without a proper contract and a proper protection and everything else. And when I finally, they were like, you know, okay, we'll get back to you. When I came back in to finish the makeup and everything, Meryl was already on the set doing her scenes. And then they came back in and said, okay, here's the contract. I did the job, did the fall, and then when I was finished, Meryl had already gone home for the day. So I was kind of bummed because I didn't get to say goodbye to her. And as I was leaving the soundstage, the makeup artist caught my arm and she said, Lisa, I want you to know, Meryl made sure that you had your contract before she left.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That is so sweet.
That is beautiful.
Yeah. I was so impressed, and I've been... just, you know, Meryl Streep to me is an incredible role model for entertainers of all kinds. Mm-hmm. She's a person who's a true artist, who has lived a life that is very authentic to her. She's very down to earth. She's very funny. She's very strong and clear and passionate and dedicated and healthy. And I think the world could be well served if all of our entertainers maintained the kind of health level, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, that I think Meryl Streep represents.
Well, it would help if we eliminated all the tabloids, because these crazy people out there are so excited to find out news about people. It gives them incentives to stay crazy.
Oh, you mean for like publicity?
Yeah, like Angelina and Brad. They've been in Jennifer Aniston. They've been in the tabloids for what, like 7 years straight, like nonstop.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like it's almost like seduction to get publicity.
Yeah, I actually have my next book is called Murder of Talent: How Pop Culture's Killing It, and it's coming out in February. And I am just writing a massive diatribe about this topic, about how. How, first of all, people aren't trained to hold the state of celebrity properly.
Mm-hmm.
Our culture promotes this nonsense of, you know, we are the ones who read those articles, we are the ones who listen to those discussions, we're the ones who watch those trashy shows. We as a culture need to stop endorsing bad behavior, bad celebrity behavior, and we need to stop creating the environment, you know, from children where talent is disrespected, and where talent is intimidated, by teachers and by peers. You know, if a young man is interested in being an actor when he's in high school, everybody automatically is going to start casting aspersions on him while trying to shove a football in his hand.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody who thinks they could be an entertainer is sort of shamed into thinking they're, you know, just seeking attention, and that there's no true art here. And yet this, our field of entertainment, this is the oldest profession. You know, it's carved into the cave walls.
Right, right.
You know, computer programming isn't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a big diatribe about that one.
We'll have you back on for that.
Yes,
for sure.
For sure. I was just going to say,
so
yeah.
Interested. If you just tuned in, we are talking with Lisa Loving Dalton, the author of her current book, Falling from the Stars, who's sharing delicious little tidbits about
so
the industry.
Cool.
But before, you know, we don't have that much time left, and I really want to hear about, you know, the accident that you had and all of that and how you've recovered. So tell us more about that.
Well, it was an interesting thing that along with that first stunt that I did, I also shortly after discovered a particular approach to actor training that I fell in love with. And it's actually one of the things that helped my stunt career take off, because this approach to acting based in Michael Chekhov's work taught me how to identify energy patterns in the human being and in the world and be able to impersonate and imitate people really well and to be able to transform and make major changes in from who I am as a regular person into the characters. And this because I was doing so well financially with the stunts, I was able to train myself extensively when I wasn't working in film projects and stuff like that. I was performing on stage and I was taking more acting training. And as I did that, it opened up my whole spiritual awakening. And as I did that, I came to realize more and more that I shouldn't be doing stunts. And I had a period where three of my friends, stunt friends, highly qualified stuntmen, were killed within a four-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that, and that was 7 years into my career, I realized that I really shouldn't be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That it just was, there were plenty of other terrific athletic women who could do these jobs, and that I had a different destiny. But I was so caught in the ego of being a top stunt woman and being, you know, getting to hobnob with Lucille Ball and Katharine Hepburn and, you know, all these amazing stars that I kept doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I was basically bi-coastal, New York and L.A., and my husband preferred L.A., and he said, sweetie, can't we just stay in L.A. and not do any stunts? And so I didn't do any stunts in L.A., but I kept going back to New York to do them. And then I quit. And 6 months later, I decided to give up the apartment in New York. And the night before I left, I got a call from my friends who said, "We're here. We hear you're going to be in New York. Would you do this? Just one more stunt, because the girl who's going to do it is actually, she's just gone to L.A. for a stunt safety meeting with SAG, and you're going to be here. How perfect. And you're actually the better size for her." And so I said, "Oh, sure. Okay, I'll do one more." And it was rappelling off a cliff. And it's easy, but there really weren't any other qualified rappelling women, stunt women in New York. So I did it, and you know, all the gory details are in the book, but the short of it is the rope wasn't anchored properly and it slipped off the corner of the cliff and gained about 25 feet in length, and I dropped, ricocheting off two sides of the walls of the cliffs. And I ultimately, after a year of improper diagnosis, was finally diagnosed as having unstable vertebra, which moved, crushing the spinal cord and the nerves every time I twist or sit or lift or turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was determined after 4 years to have a 46% permanent loss of use of my back.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So there were periods of time when I was a complete invalid. I couldn't move in bed, and it was quite an ego adjustment going from like Superman to an invalid, and really coming to reckon with all of the identity of who I was in the world and what was my job, and yes, all of those things had to be redefined, and I eventually could walk for, you know, little bits. I could sit for little bits, and but it was really many, many years before I could actually sit through a meal, like 20 years before I could sit through a meal or sit through a TV show or go to a movie or go to a museum. And during that time, time. However, I did amazing things because I dove into alternative healing therapies. I used to listen ardently to Lisa Gar on the radio at the Aware Show, and adopted, you know, it was an era when you could go see Deepak Chopra at the UCLA Extension, and only 25 people were there because nobody knew who he was. And I started applying all these quantum physics and meditation and the neuro-linguistic programming and five Tibetan rites and many, many different modalities to heal myself, to take myself through forgiving myself for doing the job, forgiving the earth for the crash, forgiving the rope, forgiving, you know, all the people involved, and being grateful to be alive, to not be permanently paralyzed, to be able to function. And I was able to have a very successful, economically successful career as an actress. And I created my acting studio because I really needed to teach this work, which took me all over the world, to Russia and Paris and Berlin and London. And so everything I learned to heal myself became part of what I taught, and it helped explain why this mysterious acting technique was actually so powerful. And so that's my passion now, is bringing that healing, uplifting, transformative information out to the world.
And is that kind of why you wrote the book? Is that sort of the message in it, ultimately?
It is. I mean, the message for Falling for the Stars, the Stunt Gal's Tattletale, sort of each chapter, like there are 40-some chapters, each chapter has a little bit of a message. Some of them are very fluffy. But the overall thing is, I got caught up in my ego, and I got caught up in the money. I got caught up by superficial things, and I didn't listen to all the signs that the universe was giving me to go my truer path, to walk away from the, you know, fame and the glitz, and to walk away from the financial security of that to my truth, which ultimately made me a much happier person. So despite a life of chronic pain, I was ultimately a much happier human being, and I really brought, I made an impact on the world through not being able to stay with, you know, the ego-bound, you know, hotshot life that I was living.
How old were you?
Finding our true path and trusting that we may have to let go of some securities will bring us greater security.
Sure. How old were you when the accident happened?
The accident, I was 36.
Okay.
36, because it was 1989, and I'm 63 now. So,
wow.
Yeah.
It was an
amazing time also, because, you know, for women, you hit those 37, 38, 39 era. And if you haven't had a baby, which I had not had, I in the book I talk about the miscarriage that I had doing stunts and the loss, and I had to sort of confront that as well, that here I was an invalid, and I was having this sort of desperate urge to have a baby, and I couldn't even walk, let alone carry a baby.
Sure.
You know, so it was a very rich opportunity to explore the choices that I'd made and the consequences of them and things like that.
It's so interesting because even by your first email, I could tell that you had a very, like, a soulful presence. And it was like, it's almost like you've lived a couple million lives. Like, I can't explain it. It's like you could tell you've done a lot of, you know, soul searching and sort of, you know, work around it. You have such a peaceful, I don't know, sense about you. So I feel like, I don't know, it's almost like you've sort of, to me, and I'm kind of spiritual like this, but that, like, you had to go through this to sort of, to teach others and to kind of, talk about what you've learned.
I believe that. And I love teaching. It's something that was a passion from early childhood as well. So it's been fascinating. At times, I think that more and more people are multi-talented these days, seems to me, and when people talk about finding your passion, when you're passionate about a lot of things, it can be very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
How do I put this all together? Or it's like when I would just be acting, I'd have these incredible speaking and teaching opportunities, and then I'd think, oh, I should stop acting and just do that, and then a great acting part would come up, or a great directing mm-hmm. opportunity would come up. And every time I tried to sort of cut back on one, the others came in. And I do feel ultimately that our multi-talented abilities these days is a real invitation for us to find what it is that we can do that unites all of those talents in a way that no one else can.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my goal now.
Incredible.
It's beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So where can people get the book?
Oh, the book is available on my website, which is lisadalton.com. And it's also available on Amazon, where it was a number one bestseller.
Wonderful. That's great. Congrats. Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, and and on my website, there's some really fun things. You can download a couple chapters. There are, there's an MP3 that you can download that talks about using some of these acting techniques to make yourself feel better.
Oh.
And there's a crossword puzzle in the book, which is really fun. If you read the book, then you can figure out the answers to the crossword puzzle, and that's downloadable from the website. And also, because the book is available both on the ebook and as a paperback, and there's also in the book a dictionary, Dalton's Biased Dictionary, about mm-hmm. the film industry. So I think a lot of people, especially when the credits come up, they see all these credits and they don't know who's done what, and they don't really understand how the whole set works. So there's a little dictionary to help people understand the terms that I'm using in the book. And it's definitely biased. I kind of tell it like it is.
As well, it should be biased, of course.
Oh, gosh, unbelievable. This is so cool. I really enjoyed this show, and you just are so wonderful. Do you have any kind of last parting words that you want to say, or any other messages to our listeners?
I think I said most of them, because the bottom line is we do want to become healthier, happier human beings. And as we do that, the more we can find appreciation for ourselves. I was a terrible, terrible klutz, and I managed to turn that into a whole career. I managed to create a theme out of falling in love with the problems that I seem to have been born with. And those problems became the guideposts that led me to great joy and great peace. Mm. So if you think there's something wrong with you, maybe find out how amazing and beautiful that is and start appreciating it and finding out how you can celebrate it.
Mm. I love that.
Me
I love
too.
That. And by the way, there are lots of cool pictures in the book.
Oh,
also,
love
they're
the pictures.
Wonderful. So this was Lisa Loving Dalton, Falling for the Stars, A Stunt Gal's Tattle Tales. And you said lisadalton.com is the website for everything. Thank you so much for being such a fabulous and authentic guest.
Yes, thank you so much,
so
Lisa.
So appreciate you.
Thank you, Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly. I really had a good time. Appreciate it.
Sure. Have a beautiful day.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
So sweet.
Yeah,
what a kind soul.
So, such a lovely lady. Yes. So pick up a copy of that book. And
next week
we have a really cool author on also.
Yes.
Susan Greenland, the author of Mindful Games, which includes 60 fun activities sharing mindfulness and meditation with children, teens, and families. How exciting.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Such different guests each week. I really like that. You know, it's
so
really cool.
Wonderful. All right, everybody, be nice to one another.
Exactly.
Be loving, be kind. We love you.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.